I'm not gonna lie to you, I got pretty cool radio voice this morning.
Why?
It's like a timber. The timber in there is, I don't know why, but it's awesome.
Did you gargle before you got to the microphone?
No. I did listen to that Pitbull song, Timber, though.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what it's gonna do. So that's what's taking care of it. So
okay.
This episode goes out to Mr. Worldwide himself.
Awesome.
And Kesha. Hello and welcome to episode 395 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia.
What's going on in Vancouver, Adam? Anything new? Anything interesting?
Big heat wave.
Oh, it's got to be a heat wave.
Yeah, it's smoking hot here.
I like that. Don't you like that?
Yeah, I like it. It's good. I much prefer it to rain, that's for sure.
You prefer it to actually to rain, yes.
Yes, beautiful sunshine all the time. Yeah, it's awesome. It only downside is that we're playing lots of baseball these days, and standing in the direct sun for hours and hours and hours can get a little bit hot, but that's, you know, again, we're splitting hairs.
I'm not suggesting that you need to, but if you want to, it is a fantastic way to drop LBs.
Yeah, sure. Sweat it out.
Well, not just sweat it out, but I find that in those situations, especially when you're playing baseball all the time, your appetite just plummets when
you're playing
baseball in the sun.
Or just being in the sun. I think you just can be standing there. I go hours and hours and I forget all about food. You're just not hungry.
Yeah. I go the other way, though. Like, we go to the pool. It's hot right now, and I always bring a giant rack of ribs.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, no, it is good because when you get that super, like, you eat it all over your hands and face, just right in the pool.
Yeah, that'll clean it off.
Sort it right out, man. Nobody seems to mind. Sometimes I'll eat the ribs right in the pool.
I have a good story for you.
Does it involve ribs in the pool? Because that was pretty random.
No, it does nothing to do with ribs or pool, but it was like, this is an uplifting story of humanity. We complain a lot. I feel as though
you and me or just everybody?
No, you and me, but mostly you. That we do our share of complaining about the universe and people around us, and a lot of times it's photo related. Sometimes it's not photo related, but I have a little bit of a positive story to, you know, go the other way for a change.
Okay, let's hear it.
Are you ready?
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay, so we sold our sofa and our love seat on Craigslist about a week ago, or actually exactly a week ago, last weekend. And we decided, like, we you know, this nice couple came, picked it up, got a moving van, took it out. And so we had already decided what we were going to replace it with. There was a really nice sectional sofa at Costco that we wanted to get. And so we said, okay, as soon as we get rid of this, as long as it's still, they still have it in the Costco, we're going to go pick it up. It was just a matter of when we were going to be able to get our stuff out. So anyway, so we sold it and then immediately headed to Costco, and we took both our vehicles because I figured, you know, I'd scouted it a little bit. I'd seen the size of the boxes ahead of time, and, you know, it was going to be three large boxes. And I kind of, you know, did the eyeball math and said, all right, no problem. I'll be able to get two of these in the Pilot with all the seats down. And then we'll take the other car, the Matrix, and just put the smallest box in there, and we're sorted, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is all a very good plan in my head. So I bring my measuring tape. I measure the inside dimensions of the Pilot. And then I double check when I'm in the Costco looking at the three boxes of this. It's a pretty large sectional. Like, there's five pieces. They can click together. You can configure it in different directions, but it's pretty big. So anyways, I measure the boxes and I think, okay, well, this isn't going to fit, right? But right. I could probably
oh, no.
put, I could probably fit one box in the, well, for sure the smallest box in the Matrix, and then I can take stuff out of the boxes, right? It's, I figure it's all packed in there with packing foam and whatnot, and so I'll take the boxes off. That'll clear some space. I'm only a few inches over what's going to fit in. I'm sure I can make this work. That was my thinking, because I was kind of pot committed. I had decided I was getting this sofa home because I have an empty living room now, right?
Yes.
So anyways, so we...
I kind of wish you hadn't said this was going to be an uplifting story, because this sounds like it's going all wrong.
Yeah, it's going wrong in a hurry. So anyways, so I get into the parking lot and my wife's with me. We purchased the sofa and I'm out in the parking lot.
And just for Lippitt's listeners at home, the Richmond, British Columbia Costco parking lot is essentially one of Dante's stops in purgatory.
Oh my God, it's crazy. So yeah. So I have one of these big kind of push cart things where I've loaded all these boxes up. And again, these boxes are massive, right? So again, imagine a giant sectional sofa in three boxes. So here I am, right? And I'm in the parking lot tearing apart the boxes and then looking at it going, wow, they really didn't pack much in here outside of like a couple of corner pieces of cardboard just to keep it from moving around. But there's not a lot of additional space around the outside cardboard. So I peel all that cardboard off and I'm in the parking lot trying now to lift the first piece, and they're all roughly the same size because they're five pieces. Some of them have corners on them, but they're five pieces, almost all identical in size. And so I realized,
just for a visual, you also have mustard all down your shirt because you had three Costco hot dogs on the way.
Right. There's that too. So I'm in there and I give my wife the small box. We put it in the Matrix, no problem. Now I'm down to four pieces. Large pieces, and I realize I'm only going to get one of these in the pilot. No matter how I configure it, there's just no way I'm getting. It's just they're a little too big. You can't take the cushions off. That was what I was counting on. The cushions are like sewn right in there, so there's no taking those cushions off to kind of form a Tetris in the back of my pilot. So anyways, the panic is starting to set in. I live 20 minutes from Costco, and the math of how long it's going to take me to go back and forth, you know, four times to get the other pieces, and my wife's going to have to stay put because, you know, we can't just leave the sofa and vacate the Costco parking lot. And there's cars weaving around me. People are getting upset because, I mean, I'm taking up a fair amount of space with what I'm orchestrating here, right?
Oh, and you would hate you.
I would totally hate me.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the uplifting part. There's a guy sitting in his truck, probably about 25 feet away from me, and he gets out of his truck and he walks up to me, and he's got like he's early mid 50s, heavy like European, I'm gonna say something like Russian accent. I don't know what part of the world, but a heavy Europeanish accent, and he says, "Would you like my help?" Right? And I'm like, yeah, I would. And he said, "I have my truck right there." It's a huge kind of like, one and a half ton truck. And mm-hmm. he's like, I will take these pieces to your house for you. And I said, "Oh my gosh, are you kidding? Like, really?" And he's like, yes, I help you. And I'm looking at him going, like, I can't even believe this, right?
I live in Chilliwack.
Well, I said, I live on the opposite end of Richmond. This is, you know, mm-hmm. going to be 20 minutes away. And then he said, "It's not the other end of the earth, is it?" He's like, "We're all..."
And then I love your attempt to the accent, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of in disbelief. Like, this is Costco where nobody, I can't even fathom. He hasn't even been in Costco. And I said, "Don't you have to do your shopping?" Like, he's got nothing. And he said, no, "I was just having a snack in my truck. And I dropped my daughter at the airport, having a snack in my truck. Now I go home to Abbotsford." And so I said, "Oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely. This would be the greatest thing. Can I pay you?" No money. So I load up all the stuff. No questions asked. I met this guy for about 20 seconds. I'm loading up, you know, the sofa into his truck. And then he says, I give him my address. And I'm like, again, I'm a pretty trusting person in this situation. I don't know how else I couldn't be. This is a guy that's really, really helping me. If he wants to steal 3/5 of a sofa, like have have at it, right? But he comes
what you
up
have
so
to do. I mean, okay, I don't know if he had the presence of mind to do this, but you have to in your car, you have to take two of the middle pieces.
Anyways, I could have cared less at this point. I was just so elated that he was taking. So I would give him our address, and then, you know, he basically, so he loads it up. He's about to get in his car, and then he comes back to my window, taps on it, and says, "I will give you my wallet as collateral." So, and I said, "Absolutely not! Like, no way! I'm taking your wallet. Like, I'm this is as nice a thing anyone's offered, and I'm fully willing to do this without taking anything." And
you take his wallet, and on the way home, you phone the police and say, "Yeah, he's driving without a license."
Or, "Hey, some guy just stole my sofa." I got his wallet.
Yeah, I got his name here. It's it's Bert Rodriguez. I think that's European.
Yeah. So anyways, it all worked out. He brought it home. We unloaded it. He helped me unload it. He helped me unload it. He wanted nothing. I offered him a beer, you know. Nope, absolutely nothing. Thank you very much. Just have a nice day. It was like, honestly, it was like the nicest thing that, I mean, such a simple thing. But then afterwards, I was saying to Lisa, because, you know, we're talking about this going, oh my gosh, like that in Costco, that's unthinkable in the Richmond Costco that this would happen. And I said, if the roles were reversed, would I have done that? And I can honestly say, I don't think I'm a good enough person to have done what he did.
No.
Like and then I thought, okay, well, now I got to pay it forward. I got to look for an opportunity to do good for someone else, because that was too great how it all worked out.
I'm having trouble making fun of this.
I know, it's crazy, right?
All I can assume is that he's now dating your wife.
Maybe he already was. He felt bad.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh wow. All
so right. There you go. There you go.
Hats off to that guy.
Yeah. So anyway, so just as a story for those out there who don't believe that there are still good people left, clearly there are still good people left. I should have taken his photo. I thought about it afterwards. Yes. But I felt like, again, I could not keep this guy for one more millisecond after what he did for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And I promise you, I will back Adam up here. He's not underselling the lack of humanity at the Costco parking lot.
Yeah,
it's brutal there. I cannot stand it.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. I think the motto is, "Hey, what are you looking at?" Essentially, how? Wow. But you're burying the lead. How's the new sofa?
Oh, love the new sofa. Yeah, I'm thrilled with the new sofa.
You get home and find out doesn't quite fit in the living room.
No, it couldn't have fit.
Hey, Sergey.
It
did not. Back?
It did not fit in the car, but it fits perfectly in the living room, almost as if we measured it, but we kind of didn't really.
Okay. Yeah. I measured.
Yeah, we eyeballed it.
Yeah. Good news, bad news. We save $40 on moving the couch, but we have to put an addition on the house to fit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, part of it's going to be out in the backyard.
The best part was, we're like, wow, well, I guess that was lucky. This fits perfectly.
Sergey was right.
Yeah.
All right. We just have the same old couch, if that's what you're leading up to.
Okay. All right.
Same old. When the time comes, though, I will try to top that story.
Okay. All right.
When time comes to get rid of our blue couches. What color is the new one?
Kind of a taupey beige, yeah, I guess.
It should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ours is like a horrible blue color, which maybe it's popped up in photos before. I don't know. But when we were moving, this is all couch related, hot couch talk. We're moving into the house. Somebody had these awesome leather couches, like a sofa set, love seat, so and a sofa. Said, "Hey, we have these leather couches. Do you want them for $0? Yeah, okay. They're brand new, but they're blue, and we just don't like the blue. Like, yeah, no kidding. Nobody does. But I said, I got two young kids. My daughter was 4 at the time, and it's like my son was 2. I said, yeah, we'll take them. We'll beat them up when they get older. We'll buy a good color,
right?
So when they do, I'll talk to you. You can pay it forward by helping me move.
Sure, that sounds fantastic.
That's a bit more of an ask over here in Germany. All right, baseball update for you, real quick. We talked last week. We were playing the top team last week. And we ended up splitting, unfortunately. Dropped the first game, but won the second game in an absolute wild one. Just a barn burner. The our game two pitcher is our head coach, is our import guy. Sure. And he's the top pitcher in the league. He's coming in this game at, I believe it was 9-0. ERA, I don't know. I'd have to, if I had to guess, under one. Like he's just lighting up the league. And then leading off the fourth inning, I think we're up 2-0, bottom of the fourth. First pitch is a little inside fastball up and in. Not a bean ball by any means. Just an inside fastball. Bam, umpire throws him out of the game.
What?
No warning, nothing. Dude, you're gone. And it's umpire we have history with.
This is an away game?
Yep. Yeah, but we face all the same umpire. Like the umpires travel around as well.
Right.
And so we know we've had him at home. We've had him at different parks. He umped our game in Stuttgart. And he is a colossal a-hole, this guy.
Okay.
For example, for some reason he's you know these guys from ref. I know these guys from reffing hockey. There's always a number of guys who just for some reason think that everybody's playing so that they can ref.
Right.
You know, so everyone can watch them ref and see how good a referee they are. and turns out nobody actually watches that.
Right.
Like if you're that ref and your mom comes to the game, even she's not watching you.
Right.
So just get over yourself. And so anyways, so he is the German baseball version of that. He makes a spectacle. It's all about him. And for example, like we're playing a couple months ago. We're down two runs in the top of the ninth. Come up. I lead off. I hit a double down the left field line. Come rounding in the second. Big slide. Safe at second. I ask him for time. And now I have a rule. I know his first name. And but I have a rule. I never ever ever use an umpire's first name on the field during the game. It's always Mr. Umpire or Blue because they wear blue shirts.
Okay.
And so they're called Blue. Hey, Blue. Anyways, even if they're wearing red shirts, which they do sometimes, I still call them Blue. I don't know. It's a thing. Anyway, so I'm sitting there at second base, and I ask him. Hey, you know, ask him nicely. I don't demand time. Blue. Time, please. Nothing. He just sits there staring at me. Will not call time. The guy's just holding the ball on me. He will not call time. I ask him again. He will not call time. A third time, he will not call time. Our coach, who is our game two pitchers at third base, he's the third base coach in that game. He yells, "Call time!" Finally, the home plate umpire, he calls time, and I ask, "Do we have time?" And so finally, he's just being a jerk. He will not do it. So anyways, so he does that. He just decides in the middle of this tight game, I'm going to throw this guy out of the game. He says, you threw at him on purpose. Well, he didn't. I said, who's going to throw at him? It's a 2-0 game. Like he's one hitter. He had a base hit. Previous inning, he gave up a base hit. And so that's what broke up the perfect game. So he's not just going to for no reason hit the leadoff hitter. What's that tapping? That tapping is bugging me.
Oh, I think that's our ceiling fan. If I don't have it on,
Leave it on.
I'm going to die in here. I'll die on the floor, yeah.
So anyways, he says he threw at him on purpose, and I said, that's absurd. Like, you're just making this up now. And he said, nope, you can't throw at the hitter. I said, well, I batted the previous inning. Their pitcher threw behind me. Right. Oh, well, he's not as good. So now we're going to have different rules for different guys. We have a guy on our team who you know, is kind of a light hitter. So we'll give him four strikes.
Right.
You know, so where does this end? And so ultimately, so I couldn't believe it. We used most of our pitching in the first game. Alex tends to throw the whole seven innings in game two. That's his deal. And so we're kind of stuck here, but we had the kids come in and they really clutched up, gave up. The other team tied it up. We went ahead, and long story short, we won that game. It was kind of a dramatic fashion. We ended up having two guys get tossed and one guy get out for the season with an injury. Our star player, our top player, top hitter in the league. He's probably hitting around 480. He separated his shoulder sliding in the third, so he's out for the season.
Ah, that's too bad.
Yeah. So anyway, so we lost three of our best players, but still came out and won the game. The bummer is we're just trying to find out now. It's normally, you know, Alex is suspended for the next two games, so he would miss his next home start. Point being, if you're the umpire, if you're umpiring anything, don't be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I went and spoke to him after the game and had, you know, said, hey, you have an opportunity to show some integrity and tell the league that you made a mistake. And like, we'll eat the ejection, but we don't want the suspension. And he said, nope, he did it on purpose. I was right to throw him out. Like, all right. Wonderful. So,
yeah, so good luck with winning that argument.
So if he's listening, which let's assume he is, quit being such an a-hole, man.
Yeah.
It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the game. It's not about us playing the game. It's about the game. Don't be an a-hole.
Right.
All right. And then lastly, what's going on before we get on to the, and this is, now we'll get back to photo related starting now.
Okay.
One thing I don't think I mentioned last week, it was a bit of a surreal experience at Goodwood a couple weeks ago when people come up to Adam and get autographs, right? Like while he's there, because he's pretty accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's not quite as famous as some of the super famous drivers that you've never heard of. You know, I think Mika Häkkinen signed a lot more autographs than he did. It's over in England. He's not quite as famous, but people come up to him and get his autograph. Well, somebody came up with a large, glossy image of the photo I took of Adam the previous Goodwood.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Which you can't buy. Like, I don't know where he scoured the internet and found it somewhere. I honestly don't know where. Had it blown up. And showed up and had it signed, which I thought was, okay, well, that's weird. Like, that's not bad. It's just kind of a weird moment for a guy who lives in small town Germany.
Yeah.
So, and I sort of saw, like, he told me about it after it happened. So I wasn't right there. And I said, well, geez, shouldn't I have signed it? And Adam said, no, you shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Now go stand over there.
Yeah. So,
yeah, anyway. All right, reminder, monthly challenge for this, we'll talk about it next week, is Portrait of a Stranger.
Right.
Did you, when you say you saw yours, did you focus on the eyes?
When I took the Portrait of a Stranger?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't want to give too much away. I took mine from a reasonable distance away.
Okay, I'm just saying, like I might shoot the eyes of a stranger.
Oh, I see where you're going. Yeah.
Payolas?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
Okay.
and then next week I'll tell you a funny story about the payolas, sort of.
Okay.
All right. Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
Yes, I actually did. I did some headshots for people at my work. They wanted to do some photos. So at first, you know, I had sort of pitched to them, hey, you guys should really pay me to do this. The company was like, "Yeah, maybe not so much." And
wow.
So somebody else was going to do it and just do it on their point and shoot. And then I said, they called my bluff because I was like, "Yeah, I can't really let that happen either because this isn't going to look good." So
well, it's tough because you are technically you're like an equity partner, right?
Not really, but.
Okay, but you do have some interest in the company doing well, do you not?
Yeah, maybe not. Kind of, sort of. It's more, right. A little more complicated to explain. We don't have to go there. But bottom line was, I just wanted it to look good.
Is it more complicated than a 5-piece couch?
Yes, much more complicated. But bottom line was, I just wanted the photos to look good, and I kind of myself. I mean, you probably do the same. If you see, you know, some photos on a website that clearly look like they're done on a point and shoot, you kind of think, well, come on, they could have done a better job than that, especially if the rest of the website looks professional. And then all of a sudden you click on headshots and it's, you know, somebody standing in front of, I don't know, like, you know, a super messy background, you think, oh, that's just, that just doesn't look good. So anyway, so what
even
I decided,
worse than that is when you have like 10 people working for you, you have 9 pro headshots, and then the new guy has the iPhone shot in front of the bathroom door.
Right, right.
Like, well, so, come on, man. Can you match it?
So I decided, okay, well, I will do this, but I'm going to do this like in the simplest way possible, like something where I'm not going to have to do a bunch of editing, something that I'm not going to have to bring a bunch of lighting. So we basically have
window.
An area where there's like some curtains in the back of the clinic where we kind of use some of those beds, and there's curtains to kind of curtain them off, and they're just beige. And I just picked a giant window and then sat people, you know, just in front of the curtain that's just beige, and just use the window light to light them. And then I must have spent not more than a minute per person. So I just like, here you go, try to make them have a half decent smile. And then click the shutter a couple of times for each person. So I had 2 or 3 to choose from. The end, 85 mil on the 6D Classic, and, you know, just kind of use short lighting.
Wait, the 6D or the 5D Classic?
Sorry, on the 6D, the 85 mil on the 6D, and then just more or less turn their face to use the window light so that I can kind of short light them.
Easy peasy. How many people?
8 people. Probably took me a total of 15 minutes.
All right.
Yeah. So, and then I said, oh, and then I felt good about that because the results look good. At the 85 mil makes the curtain that's behind them completely melt to just kind of a cool beige gradient background. Mm-hmm. And window light looks good, right?
So, who shot you?
I handed it off to one of my colleagues, and of course mine's the worst because, again, you know, getting them
looking.
That and focus and recompose, and, you know, I kind of gave up, and then I just thought, all right, I'll make the most of this.
And that's the worst. And then you look at the back of the LCD screen when they handed to you, and you thought, you couldn't get more headroom? Like, it's always like your eyes are always like the bottom third of the image.
Yeah. Come and on, I kept explaining that. I'm like, just put the eyes in the top third. Like, can we do that? But the whole, here's the red dot. That's the focus point. Use the back button. Focus. It's too many things, right?
Yeah.
So,
No, you might as well try to explain your, you know, Latin to your cat.
I know. So I think mine is definitely, it'll suffice.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
Who's spending more than 2 seconds on that, on looking at that?
Exactly. Exactly.
There you go. We get the idea.
Yeah.
All right. I shot nothing interesting. Good news. Time-wise for this episode, that's good news.
Okay. All right.
But my wife and kids are off on summer vacation as of yesterday. And so hopefully that means it opens up a lot more time for shooting photos.
Gotcha.
For me. All right, photo challenge this week was 200 mil. You said long lens, but I was specific, 200 millimeters. So we both have the 70 to 200 f4, and so a lens that I love, and then love a little bit. Not that I love a little bit less; it just kind of gets, you know, left in the bag for a while, and then it comes back out again, and then I fall in love with it all over again. And lately, I've been really in love with it, and so 200 mils, let's go.
Right.
Okay, you decide. You decide who's going, me or you.
I'll go first.
Okay, you go first.
Okay, so mine is right after we had baseball on Tuesday night, so a couple of nights ago. Uh-huh. Super hot. Sun just went down. Game finished at probably around 8:30. Sun's just going down. We turned the sprinklers on the field because it's a super dusty diamond. It's a full kind of like gravel infield. So we turn the sprinklers on to just kind of calm the dust down. It makes the cleaning up the diamond, the raking a lot easier because you don't have to rake a lot of it after you turn the sprinklers on. And the kids think it's the greatest thing ever. They're hot. They've been outside in the sun for 2.5 hours. And so they're running around, swinging their bats through the sprinkler heads. And just, again, for me, 200 mil is perfect here because I can get back where my camera's not going to get wet, zoom in, and then just capture some of the fun that the kids were having. So, of course, because I did not ask permission to post for anyone else's kid, I tried to grab a shot where only my own kid's in the frame. Mm-hmm. And so you can see the water spraying everywhere, and he's having the time of his life, like just loving life. They got you know, beat pretty badly in the game, and it does not matter when you're running around through sprinklers with your baseball bat.
No, and as soon as I saw this, which was just moments before we went on the air here, I just love this. I know this moment. We've all lived this moment, and it is awesome. And it's I thought maybe it was one of those times when the sprinklers went on by accident, because that happened that happens a fair bit. Like, because usually they're on a timer. And so if your game runs a little bit late, all of a sudden, like, you know, hey, middle of the sixth inning, boom, the sprinklers come on. It's always a source of amusement for everybody.
Right.
Know? But it's always a lot of fun. And I remember that, hey, we don't have sprinklers on our field. Otherwise, we would this would be a moment I would share now, even at the ripe old age of 28. And I really love this, because I know this joy that he has.
Yeah.
So great job capturing it. Great job with the water. Like, because the water is like I wouldn't say you have to, you know, really look for it, but you sort of got to figure out what's going on here. You have to have previous, not, I guess, an idea of the fact that they do have sprinklers.
Yeah. And some of the photos, it's more obvious, right? But this one a little less, except for the entire back, like, this is a perfectly clear day, and all of the background goes away because of the mist that's coming from every which direction, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, the only real steady stream you see is the one kind of top right of the frame that's shooting up and across, and that's the one he's getting wet by. And if you were to look close, you'll see all the sort of droplets around, all around him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And nailing focus on him without the screen messing it up. That can happen, where, like, you know, like your autofocus can pick up the screen instead.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, all around, and 200 mils really makes this shot, cause, like, compressing the background like that, even though all the science may or may not tell you it doesn't really compress it. I don't care. Visually, it looks like it does. You know, going out of focus, just right.
Okay.
All right. Good job. Now I see. I can't decide. I can't decide which is my A photo. So in a rare instance, I'm going to let you decide which is my A photo.
Okay, I'm looking. I definitely think the one of both kids.
Okay, because why?
It's just more of a moment.
It is more of a moment.
And it's also, I like the colors, like the, you know, that really kind of reddy orange last bit of golden hour right before the sun goes down. Mm-hmm. Like that versus your daughter's a good photo. It's a little too again digitally perfect and posed, and again, if I'm comparing them head to head, I appreciate the moment of, you know, your son and daughter walking together, the time of day, you know, the really kind of neat background. Like it's it's a great photo.
Yeah, I took that one second. Like, so I had taken the posed shot of my daughter yesterday morning, because I was, you know, looking at it and thinking, oh man, I didn't get my 200 mil shot. Now I had a different shot plan. When I was planning this whole 200 mils, typically when we shoot with that lens, you get in tight, and that's kind of the nature of it. You don't shoot wide shots, but you can. And so I had something in mind. I thought, okay, I'm going to wait until the sun goes down. We got amazing weather here in the evening. We're getting really just the best light. Now, it's coming at around 9 o'clock at night, the way when the sun sets here and it across the valley, and it just kind of makes that wonderful glow that we're talking about right here. So that's difficult with the kids, because they're not always up unless I keep them up, you know. So anyway, I didn't get a chance earlier in the week to shoot that wide shot. And so I realized that yesterday morning. I thought, well, I better get one. And so I went in, like, so the shot of my daughter is lit, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it's about 10 o'clock in the morning, and the light is already extremely harsh at 10, at this time of year. And so went and found a little bit of open shade by the cornfields, and, you know, that old cliche, and brought the flash in an umbrella, and kind of lit that camera left. Now, I think this is the one I shot. I forgot to put the half CTO on it, and so the skin tones are okay, but they're not wonderfully yellow. I probably should have used a quarter CTO anyways, not a half CTO. But I was really thrilled with the way that I was able to kind of feather the lighting across her. Like, it's not just, she's not lit. Like, there's that kind of dappled lighting on her.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and so I kind of liked how that worked out. And so in that regard, I like this shot, but you are 100% correct. I like the moment in the other shot. We were driving home last night, and as we're getting close to our house, I come see this light, like, and it's that last little bit of twilight, or not twilight, but of sunset. And I know we have 5 minutes. We're 3 minutes from home. We have 5 minutes to until this is gone. And I said, kids, I'm gonna drop you off at the corner. Go out in the field. I'm gonna go and get my camera and sprint out there. I literally had 30 seconds before the light dipped. And said, okay, here, you guys, I'm gonna shot a couple shots of them, posed, which I didn't like. And I said, okay, well, you guys just start walking home. And I sprinted, I'm sprinted right across like two fields. And I'm way, way far back shooting at full 200 mils across two open fields to get this shot. So not normally a shot, like I would have even gone even wider if I could have. If I had time, I would have backed up a third field and shot them. So in the end, I like the fact that this was shot with the 200 mils and at great time of night.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
Nice.
That's that. Topic this week, I shot this with my new Mark III, my 5D Mark III. So I'm going to talk a little bit about upgrading to a camera that's 6 years old.
Okay.
Which is kind of funny. It's kind of funny to talk about a six-year-old technology now, but here we are. So as I probably mentioned, relatively speaking, a million times, I needed a new camera. I didn't want one. I was extremely happy with the Mark II. I'm not the kind of guy who needs to upgrade. As soon as something new comes out, I'm not looking to buy that new thing. You know, like,
right.
Some of the technology is just fantastic. Even though it's, you know, like the classic, the 5D classic. You know, I don't want it to be my primary camera, but I love that camera. And if I had bought that camera first and it was still working, I never would have upgraded to the Mark II. Unless I needed video, but let's assume just for photos, I never would have just said, okay, now I need this one, then I need this one. So generally, I don't know how you do things, but especially back in the day, I would tend to leapfrog versions of hardware, software, whatever it was. Now it's all changed. Like now you subscribe to the Photoshop or whatever it is, and you get the updates, right?
Right.
But back in the day, like for Final Cut Pro, I owned Final Cut Pro 1, and then they announced version 2, and I said, well, I'm all set. I don't, that doesn't appeal to me, but I would get version 3. Skip 4, get version 5. And that's kind of how it would go with cameras or anything, just kind of leapfrog. So when my Mark II, when I had that for a number of years, and then the Mark III came out, I didn't care. Like, it didn't appeal to me at all. And then my camera was dying, as I think we have talked about. We talked about the approach to this, to me buying a new one, right?
Yes.
So I had resigned myself, and I was kind of under the gun. It was at a kind of a bad time. I needed a camera. I was going to Goodwood, had a couple other jobs coming up. I absolutely, positively had to have a video camera, which I would like to have just lived with the Mark, the classic, for a while. I could have done it, but needed it, so I'd resigned myself to, all right, you're going to get the Mark IV, the Canon 5D Mark IV. I wasn't thrilled about that. Do you want one?
No, not really, but was it because of the price? Like, what was the reason that you weren't thrilled about that?
Well, the upside, the pros of the Mark IV were, my muscle memory is pretty much... It's pretty similar, you know, same workflow, my lenses all fit. I can, you know, with some modifications, I can jump pretty easily into using that one. It's an excellent camera, takes great stills. I've heard the video autofocus, which I've never had to use before, is amazing. Like, everyone says, oh no, you got it. It's totally worth it for the autofocus. Downside is, you said it, man, it's very expensive. It is a pricey camera. I mean, relatively speaking, maybe not. I mean, what does it go? It's about $4,000 in Canada, right? Yeah. For body only. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Never mind what I just said. That is pricey. I found the... I mean, relatively speaking, maybe not. I mean, I bought my Canon XL1 digital video camera in 1999 for, I believe it was $6,000. Which, you know, it's okay, great. The technology was new, but also that was 1999. Yeah. You know, what did things cost then? You know, what did you pay for a Blink 182 CD? That's how I measure things, you know? It's always right. That, or, you know. What does it cost then? Oh, it was $15. Okay. So anyway, so I found that at $4,000 or 3,400 euros or whatever it was here, which is even more money, by the way, when you do the trend, like the conversion, which you can't. More on that later, but you can't really do the conversion. If you live and you know, you earn money and spend money in one place, you can't compare what it costs in Canada, for example. So anyways, which I'm going to do anyways later. So very, very expensive. Not built for video, really. That's my one rub, is that at that price, it is not built. It's despite the awesome video autofocus, which it features, and even to the point that even though I'm an autofocus snob, I would, they say, oh yeah, you would absolutely use this. Like it just tracks people's faces unbelievably, especially during interviews. You don't have to ride the focus. It does a great job. So despite that being one of the touted features, it's not really built for it. It's a still camera that can shoot video. Right. And that's because of the mirror. And you have to flip the mirror up and then use the live view version. And that's not handy. I mean, you want a mirrorless camera to shoot video, like a dedicated video unit. So there's that. Also, the 4K, which I don't really care about 4K, but the clients tend to want to. They care. And so the 4K is uncool. People say it's uncool because it first of all, it's a full-frame sensor, but the 4K comes in cropped. They in order to save whatever processing or space or whatever it is, it's a 1.6 crop. It uses the center of the sensor. So all of a sudden you have you lose the full frame advantage, which is pretty awesome. I love the full frame for video. So that, and then also the video sizes on the 4K are massive file sizes, which apparently just eat your cards. And so not a deal breaker, but kind of, you know, looking down the road, if I need to shoot 4K for clients, this isn't really going to be a solution, I don't think. And so at that price, I kind of have to look at that. And then other options surfaced. I wanted to buy one. Like I said, I was resigned to it because I couldn't, you know, didn't have any other options. And then all of a sudden, oh, you got to get the Sony A7 III. Now, a unit that I like. And if I was starting fresh, like if you're listening and you, all you have is a point and shoot or your iPhone and you want to start fresh, I think I might. I might shoot a lot of video. I would definitely look at the A7 III as a starting point. I think it's around $2,000. Mirrorless, very small, shoots fantastic video. Low light is great. Everyone loves it. The guys I shot with at Goodwood, the other video guys, they love the camera. I mean, they know the limitations and whatnot. It's not a, you know, it's not a full unit, but it is a fantastic camera for that. But for me, not enough to change horses midstream.
Right.
And I think we talked about this. It basically changed how I would shoot, and I didn't like the still photos. Like it just, and I talked to the same guys, the same camera guys. Who are all, you know, they're all image guys. They shoot and they edit and they process, and so they know what they're talking about. These guys in England, and they all said, yeah, they like it, but for photos, they didn't like the Sony. It's the processor. It's very much. It does a great job at digital imagery, but the Canon takes digital photographs. It doesn't. You do, but the processing, it looks different. And so it's like the image of like my kids walking home, for example, shot on the Mark III. It looks to me, it looks like a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the Sony will be a really awesome digital image. And to me, that was the deal breaker. There's the all the other stuff that was involved. The, you know, I would have to get the adapter to use my lenses, et cetera, et cetera. I wasn't thrilled with that idea, but I would have done it. But in the end, the deal breaker was the processing. So the last sort of option was buying a new C200, which is a unit that I would like, but right now it's just difficult to justify the price. It's a true dedicated cinema camera, but it's really quite expensive and requires a number of add-ons to be really functional. Like, you know, you need a bunch of different shoulder rigs and stuff like that. So the price is going to rack up really quickly. The other shooters at Goodwood were all using the C300, which is a similar version of that camera. And they're awesome. Like, they're great units, but not good for stills.
And how much do they go for?
I forget the prices because I'm looking in the States, looking at those prices. I think the base unit's around like $7,000.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, now it uses all the, like, you know, all my lenses would fit. So that's the good part. I mean, it is the regular, what do you call it? What's that mount called?
Well, the EF mount.
The EF mount. Yeah. So they all works with an EF mount. It is a smaller sensor, so it's not your full frame, but it is dedicated, shoots log, and it really is designed for shooting video and recording audio, and it really is an amazing camera. But, you know, at that price, you're going to spend $10,000 by the time you walk out the door, and it's awesome. But these guys I work with, they're traveling all over Europe and the world, like shooting all kinds of different events, and that's not really my business model. Right. And so while I would like it, it's not going to happen right now. And I need it for stills. So I still need something to shoot stills with. So I wanted to get a used Mark III. That became the my compromise. And so I was like, oh no, like, where am I going to find that? Like, looking in Vancouver, not going to be a problem. I mean, you could probably find a guy in the Costco parking lot who had a Mark III.
Sure.
You know, or you go on, I even looked on Vancouver Craigslist, just out of curiosity. And, you know, there's five that came up like immediately. So you can find them. Well, the German countryside, there is no Craigslist. And so, and plus, who's going to be selling a used Mark III in the German countryside that I can buy tomorrow? There's also the time pressure.
Right.
So yeah, that was the issue. But before we even get there, the pro, the reason I wanted to go with the Mark III is that especially because it was starting price and then the used price, reasonably priced.
Okay.
Okay. I wouldn't say cheap because it's, you know, but I found, you know, I figured like I could get one. If I could find one, it would be reasonably priced, especially compared to the Mark IV. Still similar workflow. The autofocus is, everyone says it's improved, like for stills, not for video. Like the leap to the video autofocus is on the Mark IV, but everyone says the Mark III's got really improved autofocus. The video itself is a little bit improved in terms of the compression of what you shoot. It's got dual cards, which is kind of cool, a CF and an SD. That's kind of a nice option to have. Although, I don't know if you've ever come across this. Have you ever been shooting and thought, man, I wish I had two cards in there?
No.
No, it's never come up with me either. Okay. You know, I mean, and now I guess that's the one good thing is you can choose how you shoot. You can shoot and basically mirror the cards, meaning it's going to write it twice so that you have a redundancy built in case... Right. A card goes down, which I've never had happen. Don't buy cheap cards. That's how you avoid that. Or you can fill up one card and then automatically moves on to the next card. So now you have 128 gigs in there instead of just the 64s. And so that's kind of a nice option. Or here's a kind of a cool one, which I may or may not use. You can tell it shoot raw to one card, JPEG to the other.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to just quickly offload your JPEGs, that's really easy to do. So that's kind of nice. It's a nice little thing to have. It's not the end of the world, so I don't really care. My lens is all fit. It's got the EF mount. That's a positive. My Zacuto Z Finder fits on the back for video. That's a big positive. Having all your stuff retrofit is great. Takes wonderful photographs, not digital images, even though it's digital. And here's a big thing. Here's a big plus for me, was that the batteries are the same as the Mark II.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah, so I have two. The one I ended up buying came with two and a charger. So and I now have two chargers and four batteries, which workflow-wise is a big, big deal. So very, very handy to have that going on. Now the cons, there are cons to this. It is a quote-unquote old technology. I mean, I think the camera's 6 years old, maybe even more now. Maybe 6 years old sounds right. So stuff, you know, stuff's happened since then, but I'm okay with it.
Sure.
There's no 4K, no slow motion at 1080p. Like you can't shoot 60 frames. You can shoot 60 frames at 720p, but not at 1080p, which is, you know, I can get past that for the money.
Okay.
So that's where I decided, okay, if I can find a Mark III, let's do that. I found one. That's the obviously you can tell I found one. I've been shooting with it. So they don't have Craigslist here. They have something called eBay Kleinanzeigen, which is something like Craigslist, but not quite as good. Although, less creepy dudes in the parking lot of a Tim Hortons.
Right.
Which I think is what you encounter mostly on Craigslist.
Yeah.
It's been my experience. No, that's not my experience. I think I've bought a couple things on Craigslist and, you know, it wasn't quite as nice as your experience in the Costco parking lot, but still it can be a little bit dodgy.
Sure.
Anyway, so luckily I find a guy's got a Mark III about 30 minutes away from me, which is relatively close. I find because, you know, it comes up, it could be Berlin for all I know, you know, so I'm not going to drive the 6 hours to save some money on a camera. So I'm looking at the pictures online. It's the photos that he posts look good. I mean, there was no lens off photo of the camera, you know, lens off and on the carpet.
Right.
It was very, very, like these are red flags, I think we've talked about.
Sure.
In the ad, and keep in mind, this guy is extremely German. The ad, he basically claimed low use. I forget what the shutter count was, but it was very, very low. He said he's a non-smoker, no pets. So he knew, he knows the red flags.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically, you know, said, hey, no, don't worry about it. So I said, okay, great. I'll come out and check it out. I figured, wow, you know, it's been up there for a little while. I think he wanted like $1,800 or euros or something like that. But I noticed the ad had been up for a little while. I thought, well, I don't know exactly what they're worth, but they seem to sell for around $1,900, $2,000 in Canada, used. From what I can glean, I don't know what they sell for. That's what everybody seems to be asking for.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to kind of convert that. I can't convert that straight to euros. I have to, you know, there's the earn euros, spend euros kind of thing. So generally, you can assume that even though the dollar is at 1.5, 1.6, in terms of actual living and spending, it's about even. Like what is that? What does a gallon of gas or a liter of gas cost you right now?
Like $1.50.
Really? Yikes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we're at $1. We're at €1.40 right now. Which, if you do the math, is like around $2.20 Canadian, but it's a straight pretty much 1-to-1 over here. Okay, enough economy lessons. I'm just trying to give you an example of how I kind of generally figured out what this camera's worth. I really don't know. So I go talk to the guy, go meet him at his apartment. All was well, nice clean apartment. I'm profiling him to try to figure out, you know, how his camera has been treated. So he pulls up, like I meet him outside his apartment. He just pulled up in his car. His car's nice and clean. Go upstairs. Apartment's clean, so I'm getting a pretty good vibe off this guy. So I look at the camera.
What's his wife look like?
Oh, yeah, no wife.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Red flag.
Yeah. Yeah. But his dungeon was spotless.
Okay.
So obviously I was like, yeah, we're good. So anyway, so the camera, he gets the camera out and he, no lens on it, but he had the cap on. And so, but I had brought a lens. Like I was prepared. I didn't want to get there and hit, you know, figure out the guy. I was like, yeah, I don't have a lens. So you kind of have to guess it, you know? So I brought everything else with me, a lens, battery. What else did I bring? Card. I brought a CF card so I could, you know, fire off some shots. Did not know what he had, but he had all that stuff. It didn't matter. Anyway, so I look at the camera and it is pristine. Like it is out of box condition. He's got it stored in a cabinet. It, like, this thing has been babied. Like he said he had like 10,000 shots on it. I don't know if that's even true. I think he had fewer. So anyway, so I basically I'm looking at the top LCD screen has a little smudge on it. That's the only mark on it, is a little smudge. And I thought, oh, like I don't really care. I mean, besides it being an indicator of, you know, maybe it was dropped. Not that, but like if it was dropped, then you know, maybe you can tell. But other than that, I don't care about cosmetic stuff on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so that smudge, I was like, all right, that's fine. Turns out, I didn't even notice it. He had put the protective covers on, you know, like on the LCD screens. The what do you call it? Screens.
Yeah, like a protective cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
so you know what I'm saying. And sure. So he'd put those on and on the top
like a film or something.
Yeah. And so yeah. I didn't even notice. Like they are pretty cool. And so that was just simply a little air bubble in that.
Mm.
So I when I got home, I was about a week later, I noticed it and thought, oh yeah, wait a second. I just popped the protective covers off because I don't care. I don't care about scratched LCD screens. I'd rather have less things to look through than have a mm-hmm. pristine LCD screen. So I popped those things off and all of a sudden there's no more smudge. So that was it. Like it perfectly, camera's great. The other move when I went to test it was, you know, set the camera to F22, shoot some photos of the sky, look for dust on the LCD screen. Nothing. Like just, again, pristine, out of the box. So I thought, okay, well, this is a very good sign. I shot a few photos around and with it, and obviously shot some video just really quickly, all good, and thought, okay, great. So I ended up making him an offer. It was around 1,600 euros, which I think was fair. He took it. He thought it was fair. I thought it was fair. I really don't know. Maybe one of us got ripped off. I don't know. But anyways, so now I have the Mark III, but I have like a day to get used to it before I have to pop over to England and go full tilt. Like I got to go out there and shoot and shoot and shoot and know what I'm doing without having to fumble around with the manual, which PS is in German. That was the one rub. There's no English manual, 6 manuals, not one of them in English. So I'm not a manual guy, so I want to figure it out anyway. So the muscle memory on this camera was similar, as I mentioned, not identical. It was kind of like driving on the wrong side of the road, like when I was over there. It's like, I know what I'm doing, but this isn't, I can't doze off here. I have to pay attention to every second. And that's the way it was with the camera too, because they've changed a couple of things. They changed the way video is accessed. It's actually similar to like your 6D. You have that little flip switch, right? The video mm-hmm. and stills.
Yeah.
That was not on the Mark II, and so that was something new that I had to get used to. They also changed, I don't know how the way, you know how when you, if you ever shoot video or use live view, if you want to zoom into your image digitally to check focus, it used to be on the top, like on the back, like next to the back button focus. Used to be next to that button. That's no longer there. Zoom is now on the left-hand side of the LCD screen, which is a massive problem because I want to check focus with my right hand while I'm focusing with the lens with my left hand. I can't be reaching back and hitting focus with that hand. It's just not going to happen. Or hit zoom with that hand. Can't do it. So it turns out you can remap the zoom to the center button in the little scroll wheel.
Right.
Which used to be record. It used to be, I had it set on my Mark II for A, it would be review images. If you're snapping stills and you flip that on, you know it's basically like hitting play on your camera.
Right.
And when you're in live view mode, it's record for video. So that was kind of how my muscle memory was going, but now that's gone. So now I basically remapped that button to be zoom, which is all I could do. I couldn't map it to the button I wanted. And so now I have to get used to the fact that that's no longer play, that is the zoom. A very minor detail, but on, you know, when you're used to it, when you've spent 8 years shooting it one way, now all of a sudden they've changed it, it takes some getting used to.
Right.
What else did I remap? A couple things. I basically set them the custom menu, because the menu is very deep on the Mark III. There's a lot going on, but pretty logical. So you know you can get through it all. But you still have to figure out where everything is, and you better do that rapidly. But I was able to set the custom menu. Do you ever use the custom menu on your cameras?
Very seldom.
You should. This is something that maybe this should be a whole episode that we're not going to talk about right now. But on the Canons, you can do that. You can basically have all the menus at the end. You have a custom one where you can basically choose all your greatest hits, all the stuff that you use a lot. You can put it in one place, and so it's easy to access. Like, there's a couple things I use quite frequently, like formatting the card, so that would show up on there, or manual white balance is one. So pick your four features that you change frequently and assign them to that menu. Very, very handy, massive time saver.
Okay.
So anyway, so I said all that, and in the end, you know, aside from the little bit of the difference in the which buttons are which, like now that middle button is no longer record, but you can map it to the trigger, like to the actual, like what you normally use to snap photos, that can be your start stop for video, which it now is. I've mapped it to that, and it takes some getting used to, but you know, we're there. I'm there now, ish.
Right.
So in the end, video quality is great. There's no surprise there. It's not a humongous step up from the Mark II, but it in the way that it changes compression, like you can shoot a less compressed version, which is nice. The still image quality is outstanding, and the autofocus is much better. I've noticed it's got way more of the cross points. What do you call those? The cross focus points?
Cross sensors, or yeah, I think that they're called cross type sensors.
Sure. So they have much more. I guess they used to just have the one in the center, which is how I was doing everything. Center, you know, focus and recompose. Well, they got a number of those, and the tracking is much better, which I haven't gotten into yet. But all in all, way, way, way better autofocus, which I've already put to good use, and I'm thrilled with. And so overall, I'm happy this worked out. And even though it's an older camera, it fits right into my workflow, and will kind of extend. It'll keep me going until all of this mirrorless stuff sorts itself out, because I think that's where we're headed. I'm kind of looking forward to that, but I would like it if Canon had a nice mirrorless, but we're not there yet, and so I kind of need something to fill in those. Honestly, for me, it could conceivably be the next 5 years before I even need to touch anything else. And so I felt like, you know, at this price point, saved a ton of money. And I'm very happy with the camera. Kind of worked out.
Okay.
Any questions about the Mark III?
No.
It feels better in my hand, too. They change the feel of the camera. Like, the actual physical shape is slightly different.
Yeah, I've held one. I remember a listener came out here, and he had one, and we did a little shoot around, and I used it, and I quite liked the feel of it, too.
Yeah, and it sounds a little different, though. The mirror's a little quieter, And it even has a quiet mode too, which I don't know if I'll use it or not. Maybe I'll try it. Things, it goes slower. Like you can't shoot as many, you know, frames per second, but it is very, very quiet.
And yeah. My, so. the 60 has that mode too. And it is, it does come in handy once in a while if you're in a place where you really don't want to attract any attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll give that a try. All in good time. I didn't need it that weekend and that was my main concern, but, I'm really, really thrilled with this camera. I mean, battery life seems fantastic, but so what? I have four of them now. Life is good.
Okay.
So I'm just lucky because if this didn't work out, there was no other Mark III's anywhere in Germany. So I would have had to buy, you can buy them, you know, from used websites like camera stores that will ship them to you, but way, way more expensive, a lot more rigmarole of having it sent. So all in all, what I'm saying is, hey, Craig, get your list over here in Germany.
Okay.
Do it. So, all right. Next week's challenge is our monthly challenge, and that is a portrait of a stranger. Adam has set the bar high. He says he's got one, like, that's just fantastic is what he says.
It's pretty good. It's all pretty right. good. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're all going to try to at least do as good as that.
Yeah, good luck.
Websites, Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
And you can find mine at AlanAtrich.com or the two of us at TwoHosers.com where you can go to find the links, photos, everything we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.